15 minutes for each. But mind your 15
okay,
minutes.
Thank you.
Don't go beyond.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Thank you, Chair. The question was asked to you, Honorable Deputy Minister, whether when tender queries are raised with you, you call a meeting similar to the one you called to intern. What was the response?
You see, what was my response?
Or what is your response?
To?
You, when there was a tender query by Gupta's, you called a meeting with Montana for clarification. The question is that your tradition?
Honorable Member, I did say that there are meetings. Most of the meetings take place at the office, but there are some meetings that I've conducted outside the office. And I did say that in this particular instance, there was a series of questions, technical, intimate questions about when did this take place, for how long, where was it advertised. I covered that and said that in that particular instance, where the party concerned felt that it would be necessary for him to take the matter to court, that I said that before you go to court, can I arrange that you meet with the CEO, would be able to explain the history of this particular tender and answer your questions more appropriately than I can. So that was the context. So it's not to say that each and every person who comes and says this, I will try and assist with the information where I can.
Let me ask it this way. Is it the first time you called Montana to give such clarifications when such questions are raised?
In regard to the Brasa issue, the questions were specific to a particular tender.
I'm sorry, you know, there's an accusation outside there that we don't give you time to explain yourself, but it becomes a problem when you don't respond directly. My question is, irrespective of which other tender, you were working with Montana for a particular period as CEO and you were minister. Is it the first time you had to call Montana to make such clarifications when such questions are raised?
Yeah, that was, in my recollection, that was the first time that I called him in particular in reference to that matter.
If it is the first time, this is the interesting part about this thing, that it means such questions have, in a similar way, have never been asked before whilst you were a minister. That question was unique amongst all the questions regarding a tender. To such an extent, that's the only time you would call Montana for clarification.
I must say that I'm not following the drift of your question, Honorable Member.
Remember, my narrative is that you explain why the question is it your tradition that when such questions are raised, you call Montana to clarify? You explain the reason. Now, my next question is, I'm saying that reason, was it a unique one? And as such, the only one that occurred during your tenure?
And now, where I'm not clear about is where you say that was that unique, was that the only one in my tenure as the Minister of Transport? I would like to answer you, but I'm not exactly clear as to what it is that I must answer.
Let me ask this question for the last time. Is the question in the manner asked by Guptas to you with regard to a tender and the weight you attach to it during your tenure in your department the first kind of this question?
From what I think you are saying, in my time, in my submission, it is clear that in the various positions that I have occupied.
I mean, in this one, in class, in transport, not about other things.
Including transport. I've interacted with various stakeholders, and on the basis of the information they request, it depends who can best assist with the information. I would refer them to the relevant person. Where I can answer, I would give the information. Where I can't give or don't have sufficient technical information, I would pass the matter over to the DG. DG, what's the issue in regard to this? Or go to the entity.
Sorry, Honorable Minister, I think you understand my question. You don't want to answer it. Because my question seeks to check. I'm no longer asking for your response now. My question seeks to check this type of a question and the way to attach to it. When you were a minister of Department of Transport, is it the first time you are, so that we can check how consistent are you in calling Montana to clarify such questions? And I'm clear you understood it. It's my view that you don't want to respond to it.
No, I would.
No, it's my view.
Yeah, then it's also my view that I've not understood how you articulated your question.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's fine. I'm saying my view, you understood it. Thank you. Next point. From Berlin, post-Berlin, Montana seeks to explain a lot of things that happened in the meeting where you sat, where, amongst other things, the Gupta said, we can also work with you, pay you through Dubai. And amongst other things, even outside that meeting, the postponement, the point is that it did this occur, that they said they would pay him in the meeting that you attended?
No. They've never raised... No.
They didn't raise that?
Yeah.
In that meeting, for instance, the issue of Montana raising allegations of extortion of manufacturers during the conference, as a result of which he called this meeting. Did you raise these things in this meeting, Montana?
The meeting was called by Montana, and in that particular meeting, as I said earlier, the issue was raised that in furtherance of their business, he cannot and should not abuse the names of the President, myself, and Mr. Montana.
I asked a specific question to Minister, Deputy Minister, that Montana says manufacturers were put under pressure by Guptas to make certain payments. I'm asking, do you remember this being raised in that meeting?
No, in the meeting, he raised all the issues. Including,
I'm asking a specific question. Was this question that I'm raising now raised?
As part of the meeting where he was saying that the names of the individuals mentioned were abused, he mentioned that from his knowledge, from his information, they were seeking to get monies from third parties because they were using the names. So that issue was raised in the context of that.
What was the response of Guptas?
They denied this.
They denied.
He denied.
Do you remember the issue of the postponement as cited by, is it ISA or this third man? Do you remember the issue of a third man in the meeting whom Dana says he can't remember the name. He says there were three, and there was Duzani, who's this other? Is it Kupes? Who's this other? Whatever.
No,
but
no,
the third man.
There was.
He calls it an Indian third man.
Yeah,
you know that man.
Yeah. In that meeting, there was Tony Gupta, there was Duzani, and there was a third Indian gentleman. I think his name was Prakash or Rajesh.
Montana says this man alleged that a conference of the 12th of September 2012 would be postponed. Were you aware of that?
No, I was not aware of that.
So he never came to your
knowledge?
No.
Are you aware? It is said that. So you say you're not aware. Okay. Again, it is said that it's them who actually, they're amongst those who played a role that the board should be changed. And then you actually stood up and said no. Do you know who was responsible for the intention to change the board to remove Buthelezi and Lucky?
My interaction with Mr. Buthelezi and Mr. Montana, they informed me that the pressure to have them removed, they believed, was from Mr. Tony Gupta. And I told them that I would not accede to any undue pressure.
Was that pressure exercised to you? Were you put under, forget what they said. Was that pressure put?
No, there was no pressure put into me.
Reason to act on that at any point in
time.
You know why I'm asking all these questions? I asked a question to you about Dubai payment. You said that was not raised.
Dubai payment?
They said they could work with him. Mundana said in that meeting, they said they could work with him, they could pay him via Dubai. You said that was not raised.
In my presence.
Yes. Remember, at the opening, you must go and check the sound. You said you don't remember everything that was said in that meeting. But this one, you are sure it did not happen. Do you want to make a comment?
The undue pressure on me?
No. I asked you the Dubai payment narrative. You said this was not said in that meeting. And I'm asking, in your opening with me,
opening,
you said you don't remember everything.
I don't recall.
But this one you remember was not said.
Yeah, I don't recall that being said in my presence.
You said it was not.
Yes.
You said positive no.
Yes.
My last point, because I had a lot of questions. Now, let's come to the Twitter. Your Twitter, you are reacting to an unfair accusation. To an unfair accusation by Suzanne Daniels. And you don't remember what you said in the Twitter. And remember, you were preparing almost every day until yesterday and this morning. You were preparing to deal with whatever issue that affects you, in particular the one said by Suzanne. And you reacted through a Twitter, and you say you can't remember exactly what you said in the Twitter. If I was one saying that to you about my Twitter, would you find me believable?
In regard to Twitter, I have tweeted more than 2,500 tweets about it. I can't recall every word I've tweeted. That's a fact. If you can recall each and everything that you have tweeted.
On a matter serious as this one, which affects your integrity.
No.
And you were planning all the time to defend yourself.
So why should I recall that particular tweet for this engagement? Why should I?
Oh, you don't have to.
I don't have to.
Oh, thank you.
Why should I recall this tweet? No, thank you, sir.
Yes. Thank you very much, Honorable Kungubel. Honorable Mazon. Thank you, Chairperson. Deputy Minister, Before you were made the Minister of Transport, did you ever meet with the Guptas at their Saxon World home?
As part of my testimony, I stated that as Deputy Minister of Public Enterprises, my first stint, the first time I met them was at the SABC TNA breakfast show, where the minister was in charge of proceedings.
All right, so I'm just confirming.
Some members attended there.
Yeah, no, many members
attended. Subsequent to that, I did state in my submission that the Gupta family organized a food fair at one of the Saxon vault homes. And I did say that I attended that.
And at that food fair, did you attend it with the then former DG of DPE, Mr. Jacinta Rocha?
No, I don't recall him having been there.
So you didn't attend with him? Okay. Yeah. Now, Deputy Minister, you must understand that we find it a bit curious that you actually said to the Guptas, in no uncertain terms, that if they didn't like what was happening with the tender process, that they should go to court. But later on in your testimony...
No. I didn't say if they didn't like what's happening with the tender process, they should go to court. Mr. Tony Gupta said that. He was not happy with some aspects.
Okay, so if they weren't happy, he will exercise
his
duty.
To go to court, and I said that you are free to do so.
Free to do so, right. Okay. So you tell them this. You tell them you are free to go to court, do whatever you see fit. But then you still take Mr. Montana to see them afterwards. Why would you do this? Were you being bullied into having meetings with the Guptas?
No, I wasn't bullied into having meetings with them. It's what I've stated in my submission. My conversation with them is that he articulates all those issues. And he alleges that, according to him, he believes that there wasn't sufficient time, where was the tender advertised. It is in that context that I say that in order to get information in regard to these aspects, it might be better to engage the CEO, who can give you the background, how the process was run, where it started, where it is right now. Instead of going to court, taking the department to court and the entity to court. That was the context.
All right. Deputy Minister, let me tell you, as a member of parliament, it's virtually impossible to get a minister or a deputy minister to have a meeting with you. So one can only imagine that being a member of the public, it's also quite difficult to gain access to a minister or a deputy minister, especially if you're a small sort of developing enterprise, as you said Sahara Computers were when you first met with the Guptas. Now, I've got to tell you, and it's not just me, I think a lot of people will agree with me, that it is highly suspicious that you have business meetings with people simply out of the blue, especially at your personal residence, because my understanding of good corporate governance is that especially if you're meeting with someone who's interested in a tender, you do so in an environment such as your office environment where your meetings are recorded. So what I'd like to know is, how did the Gupta family get hold of you in the first place?
Let me start where you began. I would disagree that it's difficult to get all ministers and deputy ministers to engage with members of parliament or members of the public. In my experience as a minister, in my experience as a deputy minister, even to this day, when members of parliament have sought an audience with me, I've made that possible. In regard to the Gupta family and other business folk, when they've asked for meetings, I've sought to direct them to the relevant DDGs or the Director General, or where I can, I've engaged in those meetings. The issue of, in my statement, I've also stated very clearly that the majority of meetings of an official nature, depending on the remit of the meeting, would take place in the office. But other meetings that ministers and deputy ministers have do take place at the residence. The issue concerned there also is that in this particular instance, as I said at the very beginning, as I got in as the Minister of Transport there, the information at my disposal was that the tender process had virtually run its course, was at an end. So when Tony Gupta asked to see me in regard to this tender and he raises all the issues, I found nothing untoward in arranging for him to get clarity there, because I believe that you could not change the tender process when it's already coming to an end. You would not be able to do that.
Okay, Deputy Minister, let me ask you this. You said just now, and you stated quite categorically, that during your meetings with CEOs, the Guptas, even Duduzani Zuma, you had no criminal intent. In other words, you yourself had no intention of being involved in any corruption or any corrupt activities. Did they have any intention to be involved or to get you involved in any corruption or criminal activities?
No. As I said earlier, you interact with a number of businessmen. In regard to Tony Gupta, I did say my appraisal of him was a engineering, I'm looking for the correct word, a person who would look at opportunities and where he gets the opportunity, exploit them to the full to advance his business interests.
All right. Deputy Minister, when you were Minister of Transport and you were approached by the Guptas to have this fanfare welcome, to welcome the aeroplane from India, and you quite correctly turned this offer down, it concerns me as to why you would have indicated for them to rather use the Pilanesberg. Because let me tell you what I would do if I was the Minister of Transport. If anybody phoned me and said, we want special treatment, a plane is landing, we want fanfare outside to welcome our guests, we're going to bypass all the usual things that every other normal human being should do, that every South African, every visitor to your country should do, and I would say, what you are asking me to do is A, corrupt, B, against the law, C, in every which way, shape or form, wrong. I would then pick up the phone, I would phone the Hawks, and I would say, this has been suggested to me, I think you need to investigate this. I would then pick up the phone and phone my colleague who is the Minister of Home Affairs, and warn them that a group of people are going to try and gain entry to our country without having passports stamped, and certainly would not suggest that this plane goes to the Pilanesberg, where I don't think you could have correct imports, any diplomatic, you know, any kind of diplomacy happening, any kind of home affairs oversight, and certainly the most unusual circumstances ever. And I'm actually quite astounded that you would have even suggested that to them.
May I respond to that? I said that the welcome service that they wanted at O.R. Tambo Airport would not be possible there. Pilanesberg, to my knowledge, is a smaller airport, and they do have trips to game reserves, other areas, and they do have reception areas where they accommodate their clients. Me having said that they should try Pilanesberg was not saying that there's a possible avenue where you can circumvent the regulations and authority of this country. That was not the intention. It was saying that O.R. Tambo is a very busy airport. You can't have any interruption for any ceremony there.
But Deputy
Pilanesberg,
Minister, let me interrupt you, because our time is very limited.
No, no, but my response, if you ask a question,
give me my time to respond.
If you ask a question, you should also be prepared to listen to the response.
I've interacted, Deputy Minister.
Yes.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is that Pilanesberg is a smaller airport. They could, if they wanted, accommodate some of the requests. For them to have the people welcome there, but the regulations pertain to all airports and aerodromes. There's nowhere that you can circumvent the legal requirements in this country. But the fundamental point I'm making is that by me having referred them to Pilanesberg was not to say that you can't do this here legally, go and do it at Pilanesberg. That was not the intention.
Deputy Minister, once again, I say that I maintain that I think it's highly irregular that even at the Pilanesberg it would be allowed. What concerns me even more is what gave this family the power or the assumed position of power to even approach you as Minister of Transport with such a bizarre request. And upon you turning them down and then finding out about the Waterkloof Air Base landing, did you question that? And do you know who authorised that, given the fact that you didn't authorise anything at OR Tambo?
No, I think I did try to explain this earlier. The remit of the authority of the Department of Transport is for airports within the country. And there are certain airports that are privately run with the necessary regulation. In terms of Waterkloof, that falls under the responsibility of the Department of Defense. The Minister of Transport does not have authority over Waterkloof Airport. We are not informed which plane lands there, who is in that plane. It's completely run by the Department of Defense. So in regard to that, I'm not responsible for that. I don't know who gave them the permission to end there, to land there rather. It became an issue where the relevant officials had to account as to how that plane landed there.
So in a cabinet meeting that normally happens on a Wednesday, it was never discussed that the Minister of Transport had said no and now the Minister of Defence or whoever had said yes. This was never a discussion that came up in a cabinet meeting.
The deliberations of cabinet are secret. The issue in regard to the Waterkloof matter was discussed there.
Deputy Minister, have you ever been instructed by the President to appoint anyone to any board?
No.
Have you ever been instructed by the President or by any Guptas to give a tender to a certain company?
No.
Deputy Minister, given what we've heard and what we've learnt in this ESCOM inquiry, do you think state capture is a real thing?
It depends what we mean by state capture. In ESCOM, there have been lapses of corporate governance. And there are individuals who are being brought to book in regard to those issues there, in order to ensure that there's proper governance there.
Chair, my final question is more a statement. I went onto the Deputy Minister's Twitter account, and I must say, in his bio, he says he's an artist and writer, and some of the tweets are actually very profound. On the 21st of the 12th, 2017, Deputy Minister, you wrote, "A day is a very long time in politics. Alliances shift like sand in the wind. Former enemies embrace and kiss. Old friends clash and lock horns." No further questions, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mazoni. I don't think, Deputy Minister, you want to respond to that tweet, because it was just a information that we get, that what is written in your Twitter account. I don't think you need to respond. I also don't want to be accused that I did not give you a chance to respond to that.
No. In regard to that particular tweet, the honourable member did give us prefix to an interpretation of the tweet. So I appreciate what she said.
Thank you very much, Honourable Dlamini.
Minister, when you were deployed as the now Deputy Minister of Public Enterprise, I said to you, I think you were one of the last people in the ANC with integrity. But clearly I was wrong. I intend to prove to you that you are misleading this committee. The Guptas are your friends. And everything you did it knowingly. So there is no confusion in terms of I don't remember, I can't recall. And the fact that you brought a lawyer, it already is sent. But let's go to the question. You're saying you met the Guptas in Southern Wales with other ministers in a food fair. Who are these other ministers that were there? Just give me two.
What I said in my
submission
was that the food fair was open to members of the public and ministers had been invited. On that particular day, I can't give you two, but I remember that...
So you don't remember any minister? Just one name.
Please, you've asked the question, kindly give me the time to respond to your question.
But I won't allow you to waste my time, so I'll just ask a simple question. Who are the names of the two ministers? No, but to Jefferson, I don't want explanation.
Jefferson.
It's a straightforward question. Give me two names of the ministers. If you can't give me, just say
yes
or no.
There are rules of engagement, you see. If you ask a question, you must be prepared to listen to the answer. You can't.
Even if it's a nonsensical answer.
Yeah, even if it's a nonsensical question that
all right.
You are asking.
Let me ask you a question again. Who are the two ministers that were there?
On that particular day, a minister that I recall was there was Minister Rob Davies.
Thank you. That's all I wanted to know. Right. On your statement, you are saying you met the Guptas in one of their homes in Southern Wales. How many houses do the Guptas have in Southern Wales?
No, in Saxon Vault there, they have several homes next to each other. So the food fair took place in one of their homes.
Okay. Did you visit that house on that day at your capacity as a minister or at your private capacity? How did you the request for you to visit there? You visited at your personal capacity or as a minister? The invitation.
The invitation was saying that you are welcome to your food fair to sample different types of Indian food. And I attended there. I didn't say I'm coming here as a minister. Well, I'm coming here as a member of the
public. But I'm asking you now.
Yes, I just went.
You're saying the Guptas, they called you regarding the Prasa deal. They call you through your landline or your cell phone. Do they have your direct line? How do they call you?
They called the conversation that I had with him was on the landline.
At your office?
Yeah.
Not in your private residence?
No.
All right. So, you're saying they called you, and you, what was the reason of entertaining their call? Is it because you went to their house to eat their food, or is it the normal business that you entertain, call of businesses, and you even take them to the CEO? What is the reason of you entertaining that call?
I told you earlier that the responsibility of ministers and deputy ministers is to interact with all stakeholders. And where you can respond to their requests is to do so.
Okay. And then your response to him, Atul Gupta, or any other Gupta when they're calling you, your response on the issue of Prasa, you said, according to your understanding, the process has run its course. Now, you are a minister. Someone calls you about a specific tender. How do you handle yourself as a minister? Executive authority, do you respond to people according to your understanding or do you respond according to fact? How do you work as a person?
Understanding is based on interpretation of facts.
So did you, do, so you're saying, so you, so I can assume that you knew the facts were there that this term has run its course. So it's no longer an assumption. We want to get to simple English. So you understand that...
Simple English.
Yeah. What is the simple English?
Simple English...
So that we can deal with this thing.
Simple English is that the tender, on the basis of the information that I was given, on the basis of the facts that I was given, was that this particular tender is running towards its end. And I communicated the same.
Right. When you suggested that the meeting, the Gupta's must meet Mr. Montana, the CEO, did you not think as a minister, with the experience educated that you are exposing and compromising the office of the CEO by bringing businesses, business people to him? Did you not think, didn't that cross your mind?
No. I didn't think that I am compromising him. The CEO of PRASA is very astute, and he knows his responsibilities. So I had no problem in saying that he should give answers to the queries that were raised.
Right. Did you know that Duduzane Zuma is coming to the meeting?
No, I didn't know that Duduzane Zuma was coming to the meeting.
So you were shocked to see him there?
I was not shocked to see him there.
Why?
Because I knew
because the meeting was arranged by the Gupta's and Duduzane rocks up.
No, I knew that he works with Tony Gupta.
How?
As a business partner.
Yeah, but how do you know? You are not into their business. How do you know that?
How do I know that? I've known. It's public knowledge. And Duduzane Gupta was not the first time that I met him there.
Okay. Right, now, that Duduzane Gupta.
Duduzane
Gupta. Oh, Duduzane, okay. Now, Duduzane, you are a member of the cabinet, serving under Jacob Zuma. You arrange a meeting for the Guptas to meet the CEO. Jacob Zuma's son comes into the meeting. No, he's not. Jacob Zuma's son comes to the meeting. As a person of integrity, that I assume you are serving in the cabinet, did you go back to Jacob Zuma and say, President, I'm a member of your cabinet. I arranged a meeting for the Guptas to meet the CEO, and your son arrived there, just to know, so that, because we're dealing with issues of integrity, and I think as a president, did you tell Zuma that his son came to a meeting that you arranged for President?
No, I saw nothing untoward Duduzane Zuma accompanying his business associate to a meeting, and I did not see any necessity to raise the issue with the president.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Yeah. Okay. 32.8 of your statement. Let me just quickly go through it. You're saying, I think it is important to remember that at the meeting occurred in 2012, the context and the public image of members of the Gupta family was not what it is today. Namely, a family perceived and projected as personification of corruption incarnate. Yeah, you are real poor.
Incarnate.
Now, let's leave that. You are saying it's perceived. Why do you say that?
I'm saying that because in my contribution to the portfolio committee today, I've said that conditions in 2012 and conditions in 2018 are different. Then at that particular stage, they were responsible for a medium-sized company. And in the public mind, in the court of public opinion, they had not been adjudged as this
corrupt.
Family that is seen as corrupt. But today, 2018, the general projection in the public is that they are responsible for corruption. And
true?
I say that that is a perception. A perception, you have to prove the facts whether they are or not. So in order for that to be proved, I can have an impression of anybody, but I would need to substantiate my perception or my view with facts. So in regard to them, they have to be charged in a court of law and be found guilty for the crimes that they might be accused of. So this is what I'm saying.
So in the public opinion, they are perceived.
Yes.
And you are saying that can be correct, according to your own opinion, because
I can't give a judgment on public opinion.
Okay,
and
but
perception.
I'm saying
that that is the perception currently.
Okay, let's go then to, because you are saying it's a perception, and the perception, it must be on your basis.
It must be proved.
It must be proved. Now let's go to 32.10. You are saying again they are perceived to be billionaires.
Yes, I've stated that.
I'm putting it to you that it's not a perception, because it's your friend. You went to go that way. The results of the 10 richest people in South Africa 2016, Atul Gupta is number 7 with 10.7 billion. That is no longer a perception. So why are you saying they are perceived to be billionaires?
No.
When Atul is no longer a perception,
you should not impose your views on me. If you believe the report that you have read, that they are billionaires, I have not read the report. I don't know the veracity of the report, scientific veracity of the report that you have read. My reason for saying that this is a perception, I have not seen any member of the Gupta's bank statement to see how much they are worth. So I can't say that they are billionaires or millionaires or they are poor. From what I've seen, I can't categorize them as poor people. But I can't say that they are billionaires. This is why I say there's perception there.
You served with me in the portfolio.
I did.
Of public works. Am I honorable, Dlamini?
Sometimes you are honorable, Dlamini. Sometimes your behavior is not honorable.
Okay, let's leave my behavior. Am I Dlamini, my surname?
Yes, your surname is...
How do you know that?
Dlamini, because there's a record of the portfolio committee.
Have you read it?
Yes, I've seen your name. There's a member of the committee. It states that you represent
and
the
ESF. Scientifically proven that
and you sign next to your name when you attend that you are Dlamini.
You know, Chairperson, I think it's disappointing. Minister. It's really disappointing that you guys, went to Robben Island, educated, experienced, but to really do the things that you are doing, it's a disappointment. Let me finish. It's a disappointment, and it's not helping us. I know that your arrogance and your ego tells you now that you are doing the wrong thing, but it's not the right thing. Actually, some were very disappointed because you are people that we thought at least there's few. All the things that I've asked you, they demonstrate that's why you're going to perceive that they are billionaires. I'm saying to you, but it's there, it's written. But you choose not to agree with that. Let me just ask you my final question.
Before you ask your final question, sir, I've got the right to reply to what you have just said.
Oh, reply.
You have to substantiate the issues that you refer to, you see. You have not substantiated anything in regard to your accusations that you make about me. There's a simple principle in law. He or she who alleges must prove. You have made allegations here, you see. And you would like the public to believe that the allegations that you make are fact. They are nothing more than simple allegations which you have failed to prove.
Yeah, but I'm sticking to them. By the fact that you can go and have Gupta carried there, the next thing you arrange meetings, it's tenor.
That's your view.
That's fine. It's my view, but it remains as such. Now, my final question.
Honorable, your time is up.
So
yes,
I can't,
your time is up.
So I can't ask the question.
No, you can't ask the question.
But it's not necessary because I want to
answer
the
question. Thank you very much. Honorable Swart. Please, honorable members, when you ask questions,
give the respondent time to respond. Let us not interject the response of anyone. Same as the respondent, do not interject members when members are asking questions. You are lowering the integrity of this committee and the integrity of this inquiry. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Deputy Minister. Deputy Minister, I'm trying to ascertain with the two meetings that were held with the with Tony Gupta and Dudizana Zuma.
Honourable Swart.
Yes.
Please, my apologies. Can you speak to the mic because you are being recorded and you are far from the mic?
I'm trying to time myself as well, carefully, Chair, but thank you for that. Maybe I'll ask my colleague to watch the time. When you had your press conference, you referred to one meeting and you didn't refer to the second meeting. Was that just an omission from your side as far as memory is concerned? Because it's quite significant that there were two distinct meetings with yourself and Mr. Lucky Montana. With regard to the press engagement, at a press engagement, you'll be asked a question and you'd answer as fully as you think is necessary, relevant to the question that you are asked. So you don't look at all the factors, if I understand you correctly. The answer that I gave on the day was, I thought was adequate for the question posed. One does appreciate that when one refers to those meetings, it is a number of years ago, and therefore the one's memory might not be very accurate. But when Mr. Lucky Montana, and again one will need to decide on the weight to be attributed to his evidence. We have been criticized for not further cross-examining him yesterday on PRAS, and that, as the Chair indicated, was not the function of this inquiry. But one of the issues he does raise, and maybe I can just alert you to that, and that is the issue relating to the first meeting where there was, in your version, a discussion relating to the board prior to the Mr. Gupta and Mr. Zuma arriving. And he's very adamant that you had tea, he said, we had a conversation and you had a tea party then, I presume. You had tea. We were joined 30 minutes later by the two gentlemen. And he says it specifically on page 53, the Deputy Minister claimed in his media briefing that we had met to discuss the Board of PRASA. This is not true. In your version, you say that you had met to discuss the Board of PRASA. Is that still your version? Because obviously we've got contradicting versions now on the first meeting. In regard to the first meeting, from what I recall, the issue of PRASA was raised, and the issue of engagement with Tony Gupta was also raised.
You indicate that the issue of the PRASA board was discussed before the arrival.
Yes, in my engagement with Mr. Montana,
okay.
That was discussed with him.
And Mr. Montana takes a strong view. He says this is not true. His version is, I had no business to discuss the appointment of the board of PRASA with the Guptas. The minister had introduced them to me and informed me that they were expressed an interest in the PRASA rolling stock fleet renewal program. So I appreciate that there's a difference of opinion as to what was said there, and we're not going to take that any further. You say in that first meeting, at the time there was talk and rumors, and you go on. So your whole version on page 32.1 of your statement is that the whole discussion at the first meeting related to the PRASA board and the possibility of him being removed, that they were going to, and that seems to be more consistent with a latter event. And one appreciates that time has lapsed. That latter, when there was the letter was sent to you and there was concerns about the board meeting. So one might have a lapse in memory. Do you think that's possible from your side?
I think that's a possibility. As I said, I've not had the opportunity to go to records, I've not looked at files, and even in the meetings that I had with Mr. Montana to discuss the issues of the allegation that there was pressure for them to be removed from their positions, I didn't take notes of those meetings, so I can't say that I've got a record.
And that would be a reasonable explanation given the time lapse and that, and it would be more consistent with Mr. Montana's version of him meeting. The issue of the tender, this multi-billion rand tender, is discussed. He goes to Berlin. He then is shocked about the news of Berlin, where people are, you refer to it as a misrepresentation, which is a ground of fraud, that he says, yeah, the Guptas were extorting money from manufacturers and had wanted this money to be paid into an account in Dubai. And then they were apparently summoned, the manufacturers, to a meeting in Zurich with Salim Issa. You wouldn't have knowledge of that, but it was at this meeting they were instructed to pay money as they wanted to get a share of the price of new build program. I was so furious at this and saw this as extortion. Then he comes back, and that's the second meeting then that takes place. He called you and requested you to convene a meeting with Mr. Dudizana Zuma and Mr. Tony Gupta. He went to your house. They were there, and the third gentleman, you gave the name. And then he spoke at length at this meeting, and you both condemned the conduct there. Now, what is very interesting here is Mr. Montana says they were arrogant and reminded Mr. Martins, that's yourself, that they did not want me, that's him. But he, you had convinced them that he was your comrade. After an hour of fighting, do you remember that part at all of the meeting? Again, bearing in mind it took a long time, and it was, you agree that it would be it was an acrimonious meeting?
All I know is that it was an acrimonious meeting.
I appreciate the time lapse. So you may have forgotten that that actually did occur. Would you agree with that? That's possible.
That's possible.
So he says, after an hour of fighting, they ultimately relented, but after they had accused me, that's Mr. Lucky Montana, of favoring Bombardier over other companies, I rejected the accusation very strongly. You say that the meeting, I think you used the word acrimonious somewhere, did you? And that brought the discussion to an end. So it's quite possible that Mr. Montana is correct in his version. It was an acrimonious meeting. You might not recall specifically that the Guptas were, or Mr. Gupta was upset, and he said, but, you know, we didn't want Mr. Lucky Montana. We didn't want him, and we warned you about him. You might not remember that having been said, although that's quite a severe statement. You would surely remember that.
It's quite a severe statement. I don't recall it being said in my presence in that meeting.
You see, Deputy Minister, if one looks at the picture of what one sees with State Capture, you see a pattern developing of certain people, certain CEOs, ministers taking positions, and then when they are not compliant, they're being moved out of the way. And it seems, as I say, we haven't, I want to categorize this because I've also been criticized in the media, we haven't interrogated PRASA and the whole issue around that. So I'm not commenting on the character of Mr. Montana. At this stage, there's nothing to disbelieve him on this meeting. But it does seem to play into the narrative of ministers being deployed, that you did meet the Guptas at their home, and there was this meeting, and whilst you don't have a correct reflection of everything, there doesn't seem at this stage to be much to disbelieve Mr. Lucky Montana on the pressure that was brought to bear upon him. Would you tend to agree with that?
Yes.
And that's fair enough, because as I say, it's a long time ago. And it does play into, because again, when people are not cooperative, then the next step would be to remove them from the board. And that is where the second element came in, the removal from the board and the strong letters. And that's where you said the board will not be moved. They're in the middle of this project, the price of tender, and you took a very strong standpoint, commendably. Would you agree that there is a pattern already developing at that early stage, although you wouldn't have known it? With hindsight now, you can see a pattern developing of board members being removed to satisfy a certain agenda. Secondly, yourself, when you did not comply with her favour, weren't you soon thereafter, a month later, removed from Minister of Transport to Minister of Energy?
Well, it is correct that a month after that I was removed from Transport and made Minister of Energy.
So what I said yesterday to Mr. Montana is, had we, and again Parliament has a certain oversight role, we might have also erred, but had we all been more focused on being more aware, we would not be in the situation, possibly speculating today, that we're sitting with Eskom and other SOEs. Would you think in hindsight that that would be a fair observation?
I think if we analyze and look at all these issues with the benefit of hindsight, we would be able to see certain trends. Other postulates might be confirmed, other postulates might not be confirmed.
Correct.
But as you correctly say, that there's nobody that I know of at this stage who has sat and looked at the trajectory and the phenomena that you have highlighted here.
Correct.
That will be necessary to be done.
I think there has been quite a bit of research from here, but I think you correctly say at that stage you had nothing. The family were not that well known, so you had nothing to respond to. But let us just get quickly, I see my time is very limited. What I don't understand, and I've known you for many years, I can't explain, because Ms. Daniels presented her evidence and there's a total denial from you with backing up evidence that you weren't there. Is it possible that she confused the date? But that probably cannot happen, because you deny totally any meeting with her.
With regard to Ms. Suzanne Daniels, I've had meetings with her. We should recall that she is the company secretary of Eskom. She is also holding the position of the legal advisor of Eskom. So in the remit of her responsibilities, there is interaction between the board members of Eskom, the chair of Eskom, and the previous chair of Eskom. She advised very closely, this is Dr. Ben Ngubane. And when there were issues around the matter concerning the payments due or not to Mr. Brian Molefe, we had occasion for the two legal teams of Eskom and the department to discuss and get clarity on the legal matters concerning Mr. Brian Molefe. So in that context, I did meet her.
What is your relationship with Ms. Daniels, would you say? Your working relationship with Ms. Daniels?
My working relationship with her is fine. It's a person that I've only met in the context of the responsibilities that I assumed. I don't know her at a personal level. I don't have any reason to have a grudge or something against her. But in the context of the ministerial engagements with Eskom and her role, the two roles that she had there, we spoke. And some of the conversations in regard to trying to advise the minister, obviously when you have two legal teams and they differ there, we'd be able to come in and try and mediate.
I've got 20 seconds.
Yes.
I just wanted to ask you, sorry, Deputy Minister, but she alleges that that whole meeting related to that specific Molefe issue, and you said in your press statement, you said as head of legal, firstly, you admit to admonishing her in the past, and secondly, you called her a clueless ignoramus. Do you still hold to that view, that she's a clueless ignoramus?
I think in regard to the first portion of what you stated in regard to our responsibilities, in the meetings that we held with the chairperson and the minister, and in regard to some of the decisions that she had taken as company secretary and legal advisor to Eskom, I differed and pointed out certain things there. To the issue of ignoramus.
Clueless ignoramus.
Yeah, clueless ignoramus.
Yeah.
You have to read that sentence in context.
Can I read
the entire sentence and what precedes?
Sure. You said, yes. As the head of legal, Ms. Daniels should account to Parliament for what happened under her watch, rather than seek to use the occasion to reinvent herself as a clueless ignoramus. Do you think that's what she did in her evidence here?
I believe that there are issues that she could better attest to and give clarity on. One of the issues, from the top of my head, I think in May sometime, she came to the portfolio committee as the head of legal, as the company secretary. And the Brian Molefe issue was discussed here in regard to payments. And there's a version of events that she gave to the portfolio committee. Later on, when she comes, her testimony contradicts what she had said here.
I understand that, and just as much as we might on the probabilities differ, but
yes.
It's a very strong term from a, and it's not normally, knowing you as a person, language that you would use normally, and it seems, but one does understand, but it's a very strong indictment. But Chair, that's the end of my time and my questions. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart. Honorable Mganga Kabash.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Deputy Minister.
Good afternoon, Honorable Member.
Thank you. My question is similar or a follow-up to what has been raised earlier on. Let's say, for argument's sake, Ms. Daniels has confused, might have confused the date. Did such an activity or occasion, be it a tea party or a tea gathering or breakfast or lunch or dinner, ever taken place in any day with the people that she mentioned, where you were also a in attendance?
No, Honorable Member.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mganga Kabasha. Honorable No Banda.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't have much.
Thank you.
Minister, why do you think Ms. Daniels, what do you think were her reasons for saying your name that you believe you were not part of?
Honorable Member, I really don't know why she would say that.
So Ms. Daniels would just somehow make up this date, this time, this meeting with yourself and Mr. Ajay Gupta and Duduzani Gupta, where you all discussed, where you discussed Brian Molefe's payments, according to you.
As I said, I can't answer for her, but from my perspective, I don't know why she would have said that. I can tell you that I've had a meeting with her, the DG, and others at my house, where the legal teams were trying to find a way of dealing with the issue around Mr. Brian Molefe.
Thank you. Have you ever met or do you know Mr. Salim Essa?
I've seen Mr. Salim Essa, but it's not a person that I know closely. I know that he's a business associate of Mr. Gupta.
You've never had a meeting with him besides Tony Gupta?
No, no.
Nothing. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Nobala. Honorable Luyeng?
Thanks, Chairperson. Deputy Minister, I would want to get explanation for a number of issues, but few. One, as a senior member of the ANC, knowing it for a fact that there are resolutions that were taken by NGCs, by NECs, for the outrooting of corruption and corrupt elements within the government machinery. And Parliament is actually implementing that. How best can you assist that that process at your level?
The responsibility that everyone has in position of government, whatever the role that you occupy, is to ensure that you do not condone corrupt practices, you do not enter into corrupt practices, and ensure that the space that you are responsible for, you make sure that the principles of clean governance are adhered to.
If all what has been said by Mr. Montana yesterday here has anything to go by, where he put it very clear to the country that the perception that is outside there, that in the looting of state resources, there is this particular family of the Guptas that that is actually behind those elements, in fact perpetrated by certain leaders and members of the community, including leaders of the ANC. A mention of our prominent leaders has been made, even though not necessarily linked to the Gupta family. Now, as a senior member of the ANC, what is it that you can do to assist this process? And in ensuring that what Mr. Mondana was saying is not just something, if it is proved beyond reasonable doubt, that those prominent leaders of the ANC whose names were mentioned are actually correct to have contributed in this quagmire. What can you say, what can you do as a senior member of the ANC?
Honorable member, with due respect, I don't regard myself as a senior member of the ANC. I don't sit on the NEC, I don't sit on any other important structure. I'm an ordinary branch member. But I understand the tone and timbre and context in which you say it. All I would say is that the members of the Gupta family have been mentioned. But the most important thing for me would be for somebody to lay a charge so that there can be a follow-up of a court case. Right now, we don't have, or at least let me qualify that. I don't have knowledge of people who have gone to lay charges. Perhaps they've done so. So it would be important that those cases be expedited so that anybody who has transgressed, who has broken the law, should be taken to court without fear of favor. I did say earlier on, I did not have the privilege of being here yesterday to listen to the entire testimony of Comrade Mr. Lucky Montana. I did hear that he mentioned the name of ANC senior leaders. If that is the case, I would re-emphasize the basic principle that nobody is above the law. If I have broken the law, if any official of the ANC has broken the law, the people with the relevant information should ensure that those people are charged. Because if they are not charged in their personal capacity, then it gives second to the narrative that the ANC is corrupt. The ANC cannot be corrupt. Individual members who abuse their positions in the ANC can be corrupt. So then that is a responsibility for all members to ensure that those who are engaged in corruption are brought to book.
Thank you. You are talking like a senior leader, not a senior member. But the necessity is that for being appointed by the ANC to be a deputy minister and a minister, you are definitely a senior member trusted within the ranks of the ANC. It is necessary that I say that. Do you know Zodwa Manasse, a certain Zodwa Manasse, who is a risk manager?
I think the name of Ms. Zodwa Manasse rings a bell in my mind. If I'm not wrong, she's a chartered accountant.
Is there any moment where you actually differed with the leadership at the transport when Mr. Mundana was rejecting approaches for him to break the policies of supply chain? And if that is the case, how did you assist him? Secondly, on the issue that relates to the wedding blame,
perhaps could we kindly just deal with this so that I remember the drift of your question?
I just want you to,
okay,
to note these two last questions so that you deal with them before I run out of my time. That the issue of the landing of the plane that is coming from abroad, can it land anywhere?
I've noted the one with the landing of the plane. If you could kindly just refresh me on the first question.
Is it possible that an international
I did get that.
Okay.
The landing aspect of the plane I did get. But now I recall you seem to have asked a question pertaining to Comrade Mr. Montana, saying that was the incident where undue pressure was placed on him. Yeah. In my workings with officials, I've said it very clear to them that nobody should be in a position to compel them to do anything that is irregular or untoward in regard to their responsibilities. That's a point that I've made in all the departments that I've served. I've even said to staff members or officials that your responsibility is not to carry out the instructions of ministers willy-nilly. Your responsibility is based on your qualifications and integrity. So your responsibility is to give the best advice. After having given that advice, whether the minister agrees with your advice or not, you should be able to sleep with a clear conscience that you have given the requisite advice.
the very last one.
Can or in regard to the landing of planes, aeroplanes, there's paperwork that has to be filled in based on the capacity, the size of the plane as to where they can land. And necessary permissions have to be sought from the Air Traffic Navigation Systems Authority. So they deal with those authorizations.
Did you play any role in the acquisition of the landing rights by the Gupta family in relation to the wedding?
No. As I said earlier, the remit of my responsibility as the Minister of Transport then was for civil aviation, aeroplanes. But in regard to the military aspect, I had no role there. That fell under the remit of the responsibility of the Department of Defense. They are responsible for Waterloo. So in regard as to how that plane landed there, I was not consulted.
I rest my case, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Luyenge. Honorable Tsedi.
Deputy Minister, let me state up front, I have a problem with a meeting that is arranged at your official residence with people who have business interests. You even go to an extent of inviting the CEO to that meeting, and you want the committee to believe that this was an official meeting and not a private meeting, a direct question maybe. Why was it not necessary for the DG to be part of that meeting?
In none of my submissions, nor did I ever say that that was an official meeting. It was a meeting, I stated that it was a meeting at my residence.
It was a private meeting?
Yes, it was a meeting between, a meeting that I facilitated between Mr. Tony Gupta and Mr. Lucky Montana. The purpose to get that information that he required.
This is why I'm talking about private and
official.
I wanted to understand if this meeting was convened in your capacity as a minister.
The issue is that if you are a minister, it's difficult to say that if I convene this meeting, I convene it in my personal capacity, or I convene it as a minister. My conceptualization of that meeting is that it was convened by the Minister of Transport. I was the Minister of Transport. But it was an informal meeting at my residence.
Now that's fine. In May 2013, you refused to give permission to the Gupta family for the plane to land at OR International. In May the same year, you are deployed from transport to the Department of Energy. Will you disagree with people who say these two events are different?
It's
hardly a month, I think, yeah.
I cannot say that the two events are not related. I can only go back to the issue that is the president who decides who is a minister or who is not a minister. My understanding is that you serve at the pleasure of the president, and if he redeploys you, he has the prerogative to disappoint you in both senses of that word, disappoint.
Okay. The paragraph 30, the food fair, let's go back to the food fair organized by the Gupta Sake. I know ministers to be people whose schedules are very, very hectic. Here is a family that organizes a food fair. Ministers, not a minister. Ministers put all their programs aside, activate their blue lights and go to that meeting. Will you agree with me, disagree with me, if I say this is another indication of the extent to which the family is influential?
I would say that we need to put things into perspective. Ministers, deputy ministers can have busy schedules, but it does not mean that they never have free time. And my recollection about this food fair was on a Saturday morning. And you decide to go there. You are not compelled to go there. It's not an official function where the presidency would say that here's a function, this lineup of ministers are required here, or you have to go to some embassy's national day.
Okay.
Those you can't avoid.
Okay, no, that's fine. You try to clarify the Lucky Montana issue, the one that you raised yesterday. The impression that you created at the press briefing, that he introduced the Guptas to you, and now you clarified it very well today, that you introduced the Guptas to Lucky, not the other way around. Just on the can you just try and clarify, just for the record? Because from what Lucky was saying yesterday, the impression he has is that he introduced the Guptas to you.
No, what I did say at the press conference, I said one of the occasions at which I met members of the Gupta family, I cited the issue concerning PRASA. And at that press conference, I said, I, Dikobe Ben Martins, organized the interaction between Mr. Tony Gupta and Mr. Lucky Montana. But somewhere along the line, what he understood, or perhaps what somebody told him about the conference, press conference, was it was said that you, Lucky Montana, took the Guptas to Kobe Ben Martins, which was not the case.
No, that's fine. The second last one. The meeting that Lucky requested when he came back from Berlin to show his displeasure about the Guptas using the name of the president and the two of you, and you even indicated today that you even reprimanded them for their conduct. How did they respond?
Obviously, they were very defensive and saying that it was an untruth. And like you said, that but the people that I engaged in my various meetings overseas said that this is what you're sought to do. So he was very strong and forthright in regard to that point.
The very last one, Chair, I'm concluding now. A number of people have raised concerns, including those who came to appear before the committee to testify. They have raised concerns about the influence of the family in government, particularly in the awarding of tenders. Do you think people have reasons to be worried about this influence?
I think reasonably, anybody would have reason to be concerned. If they had to look at the tender records of various state departments and found that there were normally a particular company that belongs to particular people, like even the tenders concerned, that would be cause for worry. just like if there are black economic empowerment projects to be given, and they are always given to the same people, then there's something wrong there.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I just want also to set a record straight that and correct honorable Tsedi, your question as it was responded by the deputy minister. Mr. Lucky Montana said he was introduced to the Guptas by the deputy minister. The deputy minister called him in a meeting where the Gupta family was present. So it's not him introducing the deputy minister to the Guptas. Let me welcome Honorable Singh. Welcome to South Africa and compliments of the season. We see you for the first time.
Yes.
Since last year.
Thank you very much, ma'am. I apologize for not being here, but I've got a very capable alternative here, Honorable Swart. We've been busy dealing with other matters of state, which will impact on us next week. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that clarification, and your apology has been accepted. I think there is no second round on the questions to the deputy minister. We have asked our deputy minister questions to our satisfaction, and I think he responded to his and to your satisfaction as members of parliament. Deputy minister, what I want to raise, I would wish to honorable Kongubele.
Come up, this has been disruptive. I think we should, maybe you can check the answer or whatever. My understanding of what I would say was that he was articulating the response of Montana based on his perception of the situation. He was not saying what Montana said. And I think we just need to go to call.
We will do that. Thank you very much. Deputy Minister, the statement that you made, the press statement that you made, I want to bring it to your attention that this committee has found it insulting to the committee and to the work of the committee, especially when you said the work of this committee works as a kangaroo court. It was very much insulting, and it almost disturbed us as a committee, because we are a committee that you belong to. You are a deputy minister of public enterprises. We are a committee of public enterprises. A committee constituted in parliament and a constitutional body. Our terms of reference, Deputy Minister, were very clear. Our principle has always been the same, and we said it again and again that if you are implicated, you must come forward. You would be given a chance to respond to what you are implicated in. I think, Deputy Minister, even if you won't see it befitting now, but you owe us an apology as this committee, because when we decided to take this decision, we had your blessings. When we took the decision of taking the inquiry forward, we had your blessings. That I can assure you. You assured us that you will be behind us in this process. But in our dismay and disappointment, you uttered such words in public instead of coming to us, because we are your children as the committee. We work with you. We want to work with you going forward. You, the
minister,
oh, we are mini- we
Oh, okay, we are not your children, Minister. Anyway, it's just a Xhosa phrase that maybe I take it from Xhosa as it is, and I put it in English, and people who understand English more than me took it the other way. So, but we are not your children, literally, we are your children. Deputy Minister, according to South African law, or according to the laws of the country, you cannot be charged by meeting the Guptas. We are going to meet the Guptas, and I'm looking forward to meeting the Guptas, and I am not, I am sure that for us to meet the Guptas as this committee, we are not doing any criminal act for meeting the Guptas. But we are looking forward to work with you in developing the country and also in fighting corruption in the government and in the ruling party. Those were my closing remarks. Thank you very much for coming, and thank you very much for allowing us to have interaction with you, because we have been looking for this moment for a long time. Since last year, we wanted this moment to come, but it has come.
Chair, with your kind permission, there's the issue that you mentioned of a kangaroo court and a letter. I would humbly ask the portfolio committee and yourself as the chairperson to privilege me with a copy of the letter that I'm alleged to have written, and where I've said that this committee is a kangaroo court. I have never ever said that this committee is a kangaroo court. I would like whoever has articulated this to provide the requisite proof. It is not the first time that I've heard this, but I am happy that you have raised it in committee in this meeting. And I would be grateful if I can be provided with that statement where I wrote or said on TV or in any media that this committee is a kangaroo court. I've never, ever done so.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. I don't have a letter. You did not write us a letter. But it's what came out of the media statement that you made. But for now, the committee stands adjourned. Committee members, I think you've got the times of our departure to